Shockwave Radio. What's up, everybody? We are back with another episode of the Shockwave Podcast. Today, we are focusing on mental health in preparation for World Mental Health Day on October 10th, which is a day for global mental health education, awareness, and advocacy against social stigma. I'm John David, here with Hannah and Mrs. Helpenstill, Associate Professor for Social Work in the Behavioral Sciences. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I think to start off, we're just going to have you tell us a little bit about your background, what you've worked in, and yeah, go for it.
Well, I've had a lot of experience working with people with mental illness, mental health issues, starting way back when I got my master's in social work. Worked in oncology in the cancer center for a couple of years. I worked at Bridgeway Psychiatric Hospital for a couple of years. But over the last 15 years, I've been working with children of sexual abuse and trauma, and been a state expert in doing training across the state for people with trauma-informed care of children, adolescents, sexual abuse, Department of Human Services, and families, and how to navigate all of the problems and the mental health issues that go along with trauma.
I would say you're definitely well-educated and well-knowledgeable.
So we're gonna let you talk for most of the time this week. And to start off, could you give us some advice for people who are hesitant to talk to a professional counselor? A lot of times it's just the hardest thing is making that first step. Could you give us some advice on how to make that first step?
Absolutely. I do think that it's normal. It's 100% normal for you not to want to talk to somebody, especially a stranger. So it's real easy for us to talk to our roommates or our suite mates or our buddies and peers and maybe teachers, parents, whatever, because those are people we're comfortable with. We have knowledge, experience. We feel safe. And so one of the major issues with trauma and trauma-informed care and mental health is a sense of safety. That's the number one component. And so really you want to, when we talk about seeking out a counselor, you're asking somebody to go talk to a stranger, and that's the hardest part. And so we'd rather just spend a whole lot of time with people who may not have adequate knowledge and training to avoid the discomfort and the lack of sense of safety of working with somebody that we have no idea. So working with a professional counselor, you've got to know that that's a normal feeling to not want to do that, but you also have to know that that counselor is going to be trained, number one. Number two, that counselor is going to keep all your secrets because they're legally bound to keep secrets. And number three, they're objective. So they don't have any of the baggage and all of the same friendships and the same gossip and the same loops, social loops that you're in. And so they can just be there for you. And they don't have any biases or alliances that are going to get in the way. And so they are just there for you. And they whatever you give them is what they're going to work with. And so that's really a very special time for you to get what you need in that moment without having to deal with other people's opinions, but really professionalism.
So would you recommend, I know a lot of people will talk to their roommates about stuff and with, you know, unimportant things, it's good to get advice, but like for serious issues, would you recommend actually not talking to like your family or friends that are like involved in those situations and seek out advice from a counselor instead, or do both, or what?
I think it's really important to know the difference. And so if it's something that is causing you great distress, things that you're actually impairing your day-to-day routine and rituals and lifestyle, so you see a drastic change or a noticeable discomfort in your life. And I think that that's just a key word that we may get to later, but if you feel a discomfort in your life that's not settling, you should probably seek out somebody with some objectivity and some differentiation that you can, that you know when you walk out the door, it's going to stay in the room and it's not going anywhere else. Because we, as much as we love our friends and we trust our friends, sometimes that stuff is so it's just so interesting. We just have to spread it around. And that's also going to just pile on the detriment of the lack of safety.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an incredible, like, tangible threshold for people to understand. Like, that's the point, you know, when you're uncomfortable in your day-to-day, I love that, like, tangible idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've been talking about it just as a culture more, mental health, kind of generally. You still don't hear a lot of people talking about it personally and like, oh, I'm going through this and I've been seeing a counselor about it. But how common would you say that mental illnesses are among college students, diagnosed or undiagnosed?
I would absolutely 100% say that 100% of college students deal with mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Now, the severity, that's a different story. But I definitely think, especially if we consider maybe freshmen, that any time that there's an adjustment or a change that you're making to your life, that's a new environment or a new routine or a new lifestyle, there's going to be some threshold of discomfort and modification or adjustment that's going to be disruptive to your system. And so when you leave home for the first time, or you break up with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or you start a new relationship, anything that's new and different about the way you normally conduct life, then there's going to be a period. We call it grief. Some people call it adjustment. But there's always going to be something there that you're going to need to work through. And some of that's good for friends. But if you're losing sleep over something, or you lose an appetite, or you're having bipolar behavior. And when I mean bipolar, I don't mean the diagnosis. I mean like overeating or undereating, oversleeping or undersleeping, isolating versus not being able to be alone. Anything that's an extreme behavior, then you're going to want to seek some feedback about that and maybe see somebody, because that's going to over time interfere with your functioning. So that's why freshman year is always such a challenge for so many people, is because too many adjustments at one time. New friends, new relationships, new routines, not getting enough sleep, grades, expectations, leaving home, all of these things that are suddenly new and impactful, and just takes a little while to get that groove down.
Mm-hmm. Going off the culture thing that we were talking about, I've noticed a lot that a lot of people will talk about it more. We discuss it. We say, you know, they're almost like words that just kind of float around. Self-care, mental health, people talk about those things very easily, but then when it comes to actually, like, they know it's a good thing, mm-hmm. but when it actually comes to themselves or having a conversation with their friend about going and making the step to go see a counselor, they're, like, very hesitant in making that. What advice do you have for just, like, making the actual step to know it's good, know it's an incredible thing, but, like, get past the uncomfortable emotion of actually going?
Yeah, I think, again, just recognizing that anything new, I'm just going to reinforce that belief, because that pattern, because if everybody can just acknowledge that, hey, this is a new change in my life and it's not going to be over with in a week or 2 weeks or a semester, then I might need to just monitor things and see how that works. But but also recognizing that going to see a therapist is new. So that's going to be disruptive, and that's going to kind of make you very anxious and worried and apprehensive, vulnerable, lots of vulnerability in going to see a new therapist. So what I recommend, honestly, is to get an accountability partner. So sometimes students come to me and they are having crisis or they're having depression and they're not really sure what to call it or what to name it. And they'll come and we'll talk about it. I'll say, you know, I'm going to recommend that you go see a therapist. I'm not a therapist to students on campus. We always recommend and refer to the counseling center, but I do offer to help make the appointment, and I offer to walk them over and sit with them. I follow up with them, and it feels like to me that the best outcomes come when there's somebody that's encouraging and cheerleading them, that cares about them going and cares about their follow-up and follow-through and is encouraging. So I think that, as with any big change, if you have a cheerleader or a support person that's saying, I can't be this for you, but I can accompany you on your journey, and I'm going to be here on the other side, I think that that's super, super helpful.
Kind of like a mentor.
Yeah. But not even, a mentor is great, but it could be your roommate. Mm-hmm. If you're like, I'm really worried about you because you haven't slept in days and you haven't been to class in days, and I'm really concerned about you. Can I go with you to your first appointment? Mm-hmm. Can I help you make an appointment? Can we talk about making it? Anything that's encouraging somebody to make that first step, because if you're in a dark place or an anxious place or in what a word that we use a lot called dysregulated state, where things are just not normal, then if somebody can say that and say, this is what I see, I'm recognizing this, let me help you get where you need to get, and I can't be that person for you, but I will walk with you, then I think that that's always a good accountability measure.
Right. And you mentioned not all of your accountability partners are like older mentors, but you have been that mentor for some people. Is there ever some sort of gap that you feel that the students maybe perceive that you don't understand what they're talking about because you're older than them and didn't face some of the same things? Would you say that like the same issues are still prevalent as they were when back in your day or whatever, before there was social media? Even though you didn't have like the internet and like cyberbullying or anything like that, are there still the same issues like still happening and like the same trends?
They are the same. I would honestly actually say they're amplified. I think that back in the old days, I think that we had bullying, we had self-esteem issues, we had competition, we have anxiety, we had all of that. But there's just so much accessibility and everything is so much more magnified in the age of social media. We're so much more aware of what people across the world, or around the world, across the nation are doing, and we're just so comparing ourselves to everybody. So it's just really a challenge to find your normal. We have no idea what our own normal is because we're taking on so many other identities. So yeah, I definitely think that it's amplified. Your original question was, do I feel like there's a gap? I mean, I feel like we've grown with you, like older people have grown, not all of us probably, but we've definitely, especially if we have children, and I have children, and so I feel like we've grown and we've journeyed that journey together, and so a good therapist is going to stay abreast of all of that and go keep their education and their continuing eds to get up, and so they're going to be aware of a lot of that. But on the other hand, I can't tell you what your issues are, any one of your issues are, and so I'm going to have to rely on you to reveal that to me. So it's really a basis of the professional therapist or counselor just listening and taking in what you're bringing to the table. So if you're not open and you're real guarded about what you leave on the table, there's only so much we can sift through.
Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned the counseling services here at Harding. A lot of people don't realize that those are offered. Could you explain the different services that are offered at Harding?
Yeah, there's a counseling program, third floor, McIntyre, and they've got some great therapists on staff. I've made lots of referrals to them. Clay Barty is one that just pops off the top of my head. Sherry Pollard just retired, but there's just a lot of good therapists that are over there that are highly qualified, and that's all they do is work with students, college students. And so if you find a therapist that makes you uncomfortable or you don't really feel like you jive with, there's always another 5 or 10 waiting, that are also available. So there's definitely some personality things that go into it. So if you feel frustrated or you don't feel comfortable the first time, I would very strongly recommend that you try again. That happens way more than you would imagine.
I know, like I've had friends before who like just seem to kind of forget y'all are human too. And so they have like a bad experience and they just kind of put it off. And I hate that for them because I wish they could, reach out to other people, but I think that's a good point to make, that just because you don't work well with your personality with one person doesn't mean there's not a good option for you. So.
And these services are free, right?
Correct.
Okay, so these are FREE counseling services. Take advantage of them. But that talking to a counselor won't necessarily just solve everything instantly. There's a long process to go through, and and different things that...
Well, let me speak to that. I feel like that's a big compound question that's about to come out. Let me just say, statistics shows, research shows that just making that first visit relieves so much pressure of completion that you actually made the step and you actually followed through and completed it, that there is a relief of pressure and symptoms that theoretically speaking that might elevate your mood from like a 5 to a 7 or a 5 to a 6 just after the first visit. And so that gives you sort of an adrenaline rush to say, okay, I could do this again. And when we increase hope, then and optimism that wasn't a horrible experience that I thought it might be, we increase hope. Hope alone gives you an adrenaline rush that might give you a sense of relief to make it to the next appointment. So I do want to say,
I love that quote.
The resolution of lifelong traumas and deep-rooted issues, yes, that takes a while and over time, and that is a process. But I do think that you will get some measure just from taking that first step and having a sense of hope and a sense of being heard and a sense of being in the presence of somebody that was just there for you. So I would say to be looking for that.
That's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. That is encouraging. Wow.
Yeah. So we talked about going to see a counselor, and that's a great first step. What are some practical, tangible ways that students can practice self-care in college?
Well, first and foremost, I'm sure you've heard this a couple of times already, but sleep. So what we want to do is anytime you're feeling uncomfortable or you're feeling not yourself, you're several days in a row, we call that feeling dysregulated. So anything that you can do in your life that regulates your system and yourself and a routine is going to be helpful in self-care. So sleep-wise, I'm not saying that you have to have 9 hours or even 8 hours, but if you can establish a sleep system where you go to bed by midnight or even 1 o'clock and then you can sleep till 8 o'clock because you don't have an 8 o'clock in the morning, anything that you can do that follows pretty closely to a system that your body can predict that it's time to rest and it's time to wake up, that establishes a routine that's really, really helpful. And then that also goes into eating and establishing eat patterns. If you're not sleeping, there's a lot of scientific research that looks at the fact that your body doesn't digest as well. We don't eat as well. So if you're really overtired, you make poor food choices and you snack and graze a lot, late hours of the night, and that just disrupts your digestion. So regulating your eating and your sleeping, and then socialization is also really, really important. So some people have said that research indicates that socialization is the number one way to combat some signs of depression or anxiety. But again, that's not for everybody. So if you notice yourself not wanting to be around people and not wanting to go to class, and or you're in class and you're feeling super anxious and you notice your heart rate is pounding and you're having a trouble breathing, then you do need to sort of take a break and find somebody to talk to. But what you don't need to do is go in your room and isolate and pull the covers over your head and take some melatonin or something like that. You don't want to disrupt what is a natural rhythm. But if you notice that, over the last several days you have not been going to class and that you have not been seeing your friends or hanging out with friends and going to the CAF, all of those things that would help with socialization, then you want to seek that out. So go do homework in the library. Go do homework in Starbucks or be out and about where people are, because that gives you energy and that keeps your brain stimulated and awake. And if it's stimulated, then it's less depressed. However, again, remembering we want to stay off of the ends of the spectrum. If you go into the CAF or the library or the STU and you get suddenly very anxious, then you're going to have to do what finds a natural rhythm and a natural balance. So again, if all of these things are interrupting your daily rhythm and disruption and you just cannot get yourself sorted out, again, that's when a really good time for you to seek a counselor. Also, just another self-care thing to do would be exercise, just making sure that your body's getting, everybody's got their smartwatches, making sure you're getting enough steps, getting enough exercise, getting your heart rate up. When you get your heart rate up, then that increases your blood flow to your brain, stimulates your brain a little bit. So if you've been studying for 2 or 3 hours, you need to get up and go walk around campus. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you walk all the way around campus twice, that's a 5K. So good to know.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you just do one lap all the way around campus, then that, and then go back and study, your brain's going to have more oxygen and more blood to it, and you're going to study better and you're going to do better. And take a friend with you when you walk and take a break from studying. So all of these things that reestablish a rhythm of, or a balance, is really good, instead of crunching out 8 hours at a desk in the library, mm-hmm. or something like that. That's extreme of anything. You really want to avoid those things.
Keep your brain happy.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Very good tips.
Yes.
Just to wrap this all up about the discussion of mental health and self-care, could you explain some of the biggest misconceptions about mental health and just whatever else you have to add to this discussion that we've been having?
I think in our particular society, we have this culture of self, of like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and being competent and being capable and being, you know, successful and outgoing and super achieving. And again, we're comparing ourselves to everybody we know and everybody that we don't even know on social media and television. So I think the biggest misconception about mental health is that if you talk to a counselor, then that means that you're failing. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely not true. It's a part of self-care, is to notice in your body, in your mind, in your spirit, when you're uncomfortable and what that's from, and how long has this been happening, or how long have I been feeling like this, and is there something I could do about it, and being proactive. That's no different than feeding your body, and that's no different than sleeping at night and getting adequate sleep and exercise and nutrition. We are social beings, and we need other people to function. So the biggest misconceptions about mental health is that it indicates a depravity of something, and that's absolutely not true. It's actually a compliment to everything else that you're doing. It shows wisdom, it shows insight, it shows hope and concern for higher levels of functioning and being a better human. I mean, if you're not being a good human, you need help to thrive. So I think that's a big issue.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such an insightful discussion. I hope all of you are encouraged to go out there and take care of yourselves, get some guidance, get some help, go to the counseling center on the third floor of the McIntyre. It's free. Go take advantage of that. Also, make sure you remember World Mental Health Day is October 10th. So just be aware of that. And finally, if you're not already following us on social media, check out @HUStudentPubs. Again, that's @HUStudentPubs. And if you have any sort of questions, topics, anything you want us to talk about, reach out to us at HUShockwave@gmail.com. That's all from me. Goodbye. See you next time.
Bye.
Ooh, Shockwave Radio.